Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Creative Literal Side Show. It's October 13th, 2019. I'm your host in Huntington Beach here, Huntington Beach, California. And today we have a special guest, Dennis from Ohio. And he will be running for Congress. And this is not his first time, but he's running on the... Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi.
Actually, I'm running for president.
Oh, you're president. Okay, you've stepped up. Okay, excuse me. Apologize.
I have run for Congress before. I think that's what you got from my bio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me, before I introduce you and your bio, let me read a little bit about us, a little bit more about what we do here. We're sponsored by Worldwide Educators, wonderful Worldwide Educators. And like I mentioned before the show, Dwayne Heppner, our founder, writes these Facebook posts, Facebook groups every day. And this is one of the ones he wrote today. And it talks about what we're about and what we're... Basically, it's a public service that we're providing to people, helping them to wake up. And actually, Dwayne is also running for president for the Green Party. So you two have something in common right away here. And I'll read what he says, and then we can get into what you're doing. You have not been taught that you have been here so many times before and doing the same old slave-driven routines for ongoing lifetimes. There is a much better way and a lot more fun once you learn to understand what I is presenting here for you to become more aware. You always have the choice with your free will to do whatever you want. But if you keep doing what you always have, then you will soon end up in the same place and forgetting once again that you were ever here. For sure, you have your personal life that is important to you, but is it more important than learning about being self-sufficient and having real freedom? To become self-sufficient and have real freedom is a huge journey. And so most unaware people will stay with what they have always known and continue to struggle and suffer on this planet Earth. There is a better way, which is a lot more fun, as you take the time to get involved with what I is sharing. My real focus is the all-natural environment supporting all of us. I'm not promoting anything political, religious, spiritual, scientific, or otherwise, as I am merely trying to make sense here and having to deal with what is happening all over this planet Earth and how most people are not paying attention to what really supports them. No one has to pay attention to all the pollution and poisoning and then actually do something real with what comes first to support all of us. But if you do step up, then you will begin to see a lot more. Through your involvement with the all-natural environment and what I is sharing, you will begin to become more aware and start to see beyond what you have known that is self-restricting and controlling you from others who use their self-invented agendas to rule over you and others. To have a real life, you must be a real risk taker and do what most people will not, because they are too afraid to. You always decide your fate and destiny. Okay, so that sums up a lot of what we do here on the show and other shows and what we do in the community and in the international scene as well, and even the galactic scene. So welcome, Dennis. I'm going to read your bio here that you sent me, and then we can start in a conversation with you.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Trying to enlarge it so I can see. Okay, Dennis Lambert was born in Columbus on March 1st, 1974, which was the 171st anniversary of Ohio's acceptance into the newly formed United States. Dennis grew up in West Virginia with his three brothers and his sister, raised by his mother, Victoria. In 1957, the family moved to Ashland, Kentucky to try for a better life, and Dennis graduated from Paul G. Blazer High School in Ashland, then joined the Army, serving 8 years active duty and Army Reserves. Vicky started back to college and finished with her college degree 6 months after Dennis graduated from Ohio University with his associate's degree in electronic media. After a year of teaching video production and building the computer network at Portsmouth City Schools, Dennis moved to Columbus and worked in television and independent film for 10 years before returning to Lawrence County to complete his bachelor's degree at Ohio University Southern in 2010. While earning his degree, Dennis began extensive independent study of the Underground Railroad, reading over 30 books and researching 20 years of newspaper articles and presenting his research to Ohio University during their Student Creativity and Research Expo, which won several awards in 2009 and 2010. I'd really like to cover some of that when we be talking to you, Dennis. That seems very interesting. I've always been interested in that too. In 2010, Dennis Lambert ran as a Green Party candidate as the 89th representative for Ohio State House and for the 6th Congressional District in 2014. Each time Dennis has run for office, he has gained more and more support and has proportionately spent less per vote than his opponents. For the last 6 years, Dennis has worked to help veterans with benefits, employment, or other services, that has worked with the Military Veterans Resource Center for the last 4 years in Chicotle, sounds like Chipotle, rhymes with. His proudest accomplishments recently in working with veterans is placing over 30 veterans in jobs in the last 5 months and getting dentures, a water heater, and shoes donated to help his veterans. Dennis Lambert has been a member of the Southeastern Ohio chapter of the NAACP since 2019. Dennis also splits whatever spare time he has volunteering for veterans service organizations, healthcare advocacy organizations, and in Lawrence County Memorial Day Parade Committee, the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, and other Ohio Green Party. Just hard for me to read this. Dennis currently is living in Lawrence County, raising his mother and two small dogs and a garden even in during spring. So welcome, Dennis, to the show, Dennis Lambert.
Thank you.
Yes, good to have you. We did interview another presidential candidate last week on Tim's show. This is Mark Charles. Are you familiar with Mark Charles?
No, no.
Yeah, he's running on the independent party, and we had a very interesting interview too. But I find that the people not in the Democratic Republican field have a lot, you know, they're a lot more real with what's going on, and that's our concern too. What is really going on here? So maybe you can tell us about why you are running for president of the United States.
Well, every time I've run for office, I've created some sort of influence over the campaigns of the opposition. When I ran in 2010 for the state house, I didn't get invited to too many events, but the one or two events I did get invited to, I found out later on that the Democrat and the Republican were taking up my speaking points. So knowing that, I didn't spend a lot of money, I got quite a few votes. I got over 3% of the vote every time I've run for office. But I've spent substantially less money, but that's because I've gone out and talked to people about the issues that really affect them and how what I'm running on will benefit them. So it just comes down to influence. If I can provide some sort of influence to create a better direction for the country, especially based on the issues that I'm running on, I think our nation, our communities, our world would be much better.
We're particularly interested.
Yeah, real quickly, I'm not delusional enough to think that I will win, but I do think I could provide some influence.
Well, I think it's interesting. The Green Party, someone there posted that in winning isn't as important as providing awareness for people. And that's
right.
What we're promoting too. So
look at the issues that the Democrats are running on now, the Green New Deal and health care for all, that's something that the Green Party has been pushing for 10 years or more.
What are your environmental positions? What is your focus, particularly in the environment?
Well, it's not in that bio there, but when I was in Boy Scouts, my Eagle Scout project was about recycling and reduce, reuse, and recycling. That's the three R's that we should be associating with everything we do in our society based on the amount of trash and disorganized chemical messes that we're creating in pockets of land. I've developed, and I'm still working on some of the kinks. I hope to release it here in the next week or two, a renewable infrastructure investment program that, in my opinion, it would revolutionize a lot of different things that we're dealing with. Energy generation, the way agriculture reacts to our needs as consumers, as well as the environment, transportation systems will be affected. Really a really complex and diverse program that begins with recognizing first, we have to, before we invest in our infrastructure, we have to look at three different things. One, is it safe? Number two, is it clean? And number three, is it portable? Can we use it in different communities throughout the United States? Because if it's safe, clean, and portable, then it should be adaptable to just about every community that we see in the United States as well as around the world. I definitely believe in climate change. I was one of the young people who was keeping on top of the ozone hole. When we started banning CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons, from our aerosols, we started seeing a reduction in the whole of the ozone layer. So we know that if we take small steps towards mitigating and reversing a lot of these issues that we see with climate change, we will be able to reverse the effects. It just depends on how fast, how willing, and is the people really willing to do it. If we provide them with answers that will not only affect their environment but affect their pocketbook, I think that's the key to really solving a lot of these issues, because a lot of people are wanting that magical person to come in, wave a magic wand, and fix everything. They're expecting a one-size-fits-all problem, but that's not how the world works, and we need to look at these communities and invest in what resources that they have for developing a renewable infrastructure.
Yeah, I'll ask you one more question, and then I'll open it up to the other callers here. Do you see any role models or any communities locally or even in other countries that are doing something that makes sense with the environmental programs that they have going on?
I believe there's a lot of small things going on all around me, but it's not widely accepted until people can start seeing the benefit from it. Along 64, heading out east towards Charleston, West Virginia, there's a water plant that has solar panels that power it. After a few years, they realized how beneficial that was, and they added a few more solar panels to it. In Kentucky, not too far from where I am, they've converted a coal field to a solar field. In Athens, Ohio, there's a company, Third Sun Solar. They've been installing solar panels all throughout the communities around here. And then over in West Virginia, we've got Solar Holler, which they're developing a lot of integrated solar programs into communities, not just estimating how much they're going to use, but how it can be better integrated into their communities, into the existing infrastructure and the architecture of nature, instead of creating, mining, strip mining basically will strip all the forests and everything off and then go after the minerals underneath. We're seeing the same thing with mountaintop removal. With solar, we don't need to clear cut all these large areas to have solar panels put down. And honestly, with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, one of the things that they've been working on is doing research into installing wind turbines on mountaintops along West Virginia, which would be another resource for energy instead of removing the mountaintops. And I mean, it just scars the earth. I've seen it from the air, and a lot of these coal people are saying, well, they're getting it ready for they could build a Walmart on that mountaintop now, because now they got roads and it's flat, but there's no people living in a community to be able to support this so-called infrastructure development that mountaintop removal provides. So, like, once again, if we look at what the community can provide, and here where I live, we have, quite a bit of the Ohio River that's not being used to generate any sort of electricity whatsoever. There's 28 dams, locks and dams on the Ohio River, 19 of them generate electricity, and only two of them generate electricity for anything beyond the locks and dams. If we can retrofit a lot of these locks and dams with hydrokinetic power as well as the bridges, we could talk about free electricity for these communities. That we develop jobs for people to install and maintain these things, and it's just a source of income for these communities on a continual basis that doesn't create chemical or biological waste.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dennis. Let's open it up now to the callers and see if they have any comments or questions for you. So go ahead. Go ahead.
I have a quick question. Dennis, you're running for president, correct?
Yes, sir.
Well, if I was going to vote and had a president enter office, the first thing I would like to see happen in the first year of his presidency is I would like to see the banking system under control to where no individual in the country had to pay more than the maybe not more than like 3 or 4% more for a bank loan or credit card or a mortgage on their property than the banks are willing to give to a person in a savings account. So, for example, if you wanted to put money in a savings account today, they're giving you maybe 1 or 2%. And I would like to see the banking system controlled to where, if that was the case, they could not charge more than 5% to anybody in the country, no matter what their credit rating was, on their credit cards, auto loans, house mortgage, anything like that. That was one thing I would like to see. A second thing I would like to see the president do is remove all this poison they're putting in all the city drinking tap water systems, all this fluoride or whatever that poison they put in under the pretense of saving cavities for children. I would like to see all the water in every township throughout the United States gotten rid of all the poisons they put in the water. And I would like to see all the toxic chemicals that they put in the foods and everything else in the country gotten rid of. I would also like to see all the chemtrail operations stopped. Every time you look up in the sky and you see an airliner fly over and you see a white trail behind that aircraft, it's poisonous toxins or nanobots or something else that should not be going into our atmosphere. I would like to see all that removed. And speaking of dams along a water, there was a book written by Victor Schauerberger, who was the main manager of the Black Forest in Germany around the 30s in Germany, the famous Black Forest. And he wrote a book showing how every dam on any river anywhere in the world damages the ecology of the planet. Every single dam does damage to the environment. So I would like to see a study done where they remove every dam out there and let nature take its course and restore nature. So these are just a couple things I would like to see, and I got a lot more, but that's enough. I'd like you to comment on that, Dennis.
Just small things, right?
Just the small things, yep.
Well, as far as monetary reform, I'm actually working with the Green Party's Monetary Reform Committee to develop a platform for monetary reform that includes community banking, where we're not loaning money that doesn't exist as it works in the system now, where, you know, banks will create loans and develop that on money that they don't actually have. So we want to get back to a community banking where it's more responsive to the community. Obviously, yeah, I agree. Interest rates are clearly out of control. And, you know, somebody who, when I was making, you know, $35,000-$40,000 a year, I couldn't get a loan to buy a riding lawnmower just because I didn't have good credit. And it really hurts the economy more than people realize not to be able to get micro loans or micro grants to help people develop either a business or just take care of their stuff at home. So certainly I am looking deeply into monetary reform. The water. Yeah. When I went back to school, I studied a lot of, but I had to take a science class, and the science class was about environmental ecology, and we visited a couple of water plants as well as, you know, I did a couple of those things when I was in Boy Scouts. So I believe water is a human right, and we don't need to be adding chemicals to water to improve them. What we need to do is find cleaner, safer ways to purify water or use aquifer water for potability, as well as develop recycling programs so that we're not just dumping water waste from, you know, home or industrial use to back into our waterways, which, you know, we all agree are pretty polluted. When I was doing research in 2010, I found that just in one day, over 3 million pounds of untreated human waste was dumped into the Ohio River in just one day. To the north of me, I've got Toledo, and they're seeing a lot of issues with the toxic runoff, and that's another issue that, you know, I hope to address in my renewable infrastructure investment program, to get away from a lot of these chemicals that we're using for farming, which leads me into your next segment about all the chemicals in our food as well. We need to develop a system where we can get these people certified organic gardeners in a less expensive way. I know that I spoke to some people in Missouri, and they were telling me that the state has developed a program to help fund people getting that certification as an organic grower so they can provide organic and fresher produce to communities. And agriculture is another issue that's really touched in my renewable infrastructure, about creating shorter loops for our food services. As far as the geochemical engineering, really, I don't think if we are doing that, that we don't need to be dumping more chemicals into the air more than what we are already doing through our unnatural manufacturing processes that are just dumping chemicals into the air, the water, and onto the land. We need to look into not to trying to geoengineer our people or our planet. We just need to learn to work in symbiosis more with our planet. As somebody who does garden and grow his own food, I'm very well aware of how the environment changes and how I had to wait later to plant my garden this spring. And I was expecting the warm to stick around a little bit longer, so I expected to be able to grow more in the garden this year. But we hit a cold snap, and I think I got some frost that killed off about half my plants in my garden. So that cut short my growing season by about 2-3 weeks. So I'm being more aware and symbiotic with our environment, I think, is the best way to design our future. Instead of trying to compete with the planet, we need to work with it.
Well, you've heard of the book called Under an Ionized Sky, correct?
Yes. Yes. I have heard of it.
Where the lady that wrote the book kind of documents what's going on with the spraying of all the different types of chemicals and how dangerous they are to plant life and human life and all every as a matter of fact they've practically on this planet they've practically destroyed the infrastructure of life on this planet.
Yeah, it's somebody who worked with a lot of veterans with their claims on Agent Orange exposure from Vietnam. I understand how dangerous just a minute amount of chemicals can cause long-term pain in not only the environment, but in people as well.
So as president, how would you stop the chemtrails? If Congress has no control over it, if Congress doesn't regulate the spraying of chemtrails, the pilots can't stop it because they'll be fired if they try to stop it. So how, as president, are you going to be able to stop that from happening?
I have executive order using the military to put an end to it. I'm sure there's a lot of different ways that we could go about ending it. It's just we need to look at all the options. Directly, defunding it would be the quickest way to end any harmful programs that our nation is running.
Yeah, but I don't think that's funded through Congress.
Well, we find out where they're funded from through or by and put an end to
it. Let me change topics on you, Dennis. Speaking of executive order, can you tell me how executive orders are shown in the original Constitution? Where in the original Constitution that of the United States of America does it talk about the president having the power to do executive orders?
I don't have it right in front of me right now, so I couldn't tell you, but under general law, an executive is allowed to create, I forget which section it is. I think it's Section 7, where the president has the right to make appointments when the Senate is out of session. Constitutional scholars would certainly say that an extension of that would be able to write executive orders to make short-term solutions to legislative delayed action.
Well, how come Congress doesn't have to approve executive orders? Because they're not even allowed to change an executive order. That's how President Trump and Obama was able to do everything they did under executive order, and Congress had their hands tied. There wasn't anything they could do to stop it because executive order had nothing to do through the democratic process.
That's not entirely true. The Congress can make a law that overturns an executive order.
Well, you know, since you're from Ohio, have you ever heard of the group called Right Way Law?
No.
Well, back in the 90s, I ran across a group of people that called themselves Right Way Law, and they were a group of self-proclaimed patriot Americans that were showing, you know, they were bringing up constitutional issues and all that kind of thing. And they would travel from city to city and speak to people, and they would share everything they learned about the Constitution. And one of the things that they shared with everybody that they came in contact with is they gave everybody a copy of the new corporate Constitution of the United States of America. And that was came about around 5 years after the end of the Civil War. And what happened, according to this, and I actually read a copy of it. It was they found it in the Yale Law book, in the Yale Law Library, and made copies of it for everybody. The Skull and Crossbones people were privy to it because many of the presidents, like George H.W. Bush and all them that were Yaleys and Elis, they were very familiar with this. And right after we had five years of Never Never Land, after the Civil War ended, they murdered Abraham Lincoln, and then the United States was like in Never Never Land. And Right Way Law pointed out that the generals got together and decided, since the United States was no longer operating under the Constitution of 1789, they created their own Constitution where they incorporated the United States of America, and they made it a corporation. And the power of this organization was all these generals like General Grant and all them signing on board to provide the military power. And they signed a brand new Constitution where all U.S. senators in Congress would only be advisory to the president. The only law of the land would be presidential executive order, and the newly elected president of the United States would be declared, he would have full dictatorial powers over the people and Congress. And I saw this myself. I saw it in writing, the new Constitution. And it's not readily publicly available, but Right Way Law dug it out and they found a copy of it. And that's where executive orders started. And at the same time, Black's Law Dictionary started printing out legal terms. Edition number one started at the same time that the corporate America started. And they defined the terms of what new corporate America was. Now, the trick in order to pull this over on the people is they had to have the senators and congressmen from each state elected as it was in the original Constitution, but they were not told they were only advisory in nature. They were only advisors to the president. And so, I mean, I have seen that, and if Right Way Law is still around, you might want to look them up. And, you know, a lot of people feel that that's really true, and that's why we're kind of, they've established what you might call a maritime law in the United States. And I've talked to judges that have gone through judge schools, and they teach them in the judge schools that the Constitution, well, what they tell the judges is that we no longer operate under the Constitution of 1789, but fake it so you don't misrule against somebody so bad that people actually find out that that's really the truth. And so you have, if there's any truth to any of this, and what a lot of people now believe, you have kind of an uphill climb here on how to deal with this situation as this becomes more and more publicly available. So would you like to comment on that?
I've not heard anything about that. I would be interested in reading about it. I just actually got, I'm in the middle of reading a book right now about the Civil War. You know, a lot of my research that I've done has been prior to the Civil War, and I was really only here in the last year or so got into anything post-Civil War. I read McKinley's biography and a couple other things, Teddy Roosevelt's biography and a few other things. But and actually a friend of mine who teaches at University of Cincinnati sent me a book about the Knights of the Golden Circle. It was one of the precursors to the Ku Klux Klan. So I would definitely be, if you would like to send me some information on that to my email at dlpotus2020@gmail.com, I would love to
What I would suggest is you try to find the Right Way Law Group. It's right there in Ohio, right where you're from. And I think they might have operated out of Columbus. But, yeah, they should still be around somewhere, some of those guys. And
okay.
And just as an idea, like, one day I was trying to show people the reality of chemtrails. So I went on YouTube and typed in chemtrails, and they started showing these military pilots flying along and watching an airliner dumping tons and tons of chemtrails in the atmosphere. And then they had to stop, and they flew along for about 10 miles where nothing came out of the back of the jet engines. And then all of a sudden it started spraying again, and the two Air Force pilots said to each other, they must have been switching tanks from one tank to another tank where they had to switch it off for a couple minutes while they were switching tanks. I mean, and then what really kind of knocked my socks off was an article by Prince, the singer from the Minneapolis area.
Yeah.
And he said that he was, there was a whole bunch of people that tutored him when he was a young man that, you know, from the South, and a bunch of blacks that had been following politics ever since well before the Civil War. And one of these guys that studied the real law, he said to Prince, he said, there were 8 presidents in recorded history in America before George Washington. And it really, really upset him. Prince was, he was ready to hang somebody. He was so upset when he found that out. So there's something about the history of our country that's went on, that where the information got buried, and a lot of people know about it, but they're not bringing it out to the public. So
yeah.
I just thought I'd share that with you also.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are missed from our education, like the Second Constitutional Convention that gives us the Constitution that we have now. First Constitutional Convention gave us the Confederation, Articles of Confederation, and John Hanson was the first elected president of the United States. So, yeah, but the education is another issue I'd really like to get into deeply, but, you know, we're probably not a lot of time to get into that, but I think an enriched education and having kids guide their own education a little bit more would be a better way to educate our youth. You know, when I was younger, I had a lot of curiosity, but when I was in fourth grade and when I was in 10th grade, I was being taught the same thing. So I don't think much changed between those 6 years of a public education system. So when I got out of school, before I started college, I started educating myself my own way by, you know, picking up a book and getting into some research and reading articles from magazines and whatever information I get a hold of myself. So I think really our education system needs to be overhauled. Really, one of the more revolutionary ideas I have is, you know, we don't get teenagers up at 8 o'clock in the morning to start school. Instead, we let them start school around 10 or 11 o'clock. I let them go to school until about 6 o'clock in the evening. Instead of having no recess for kids that are 5 to 12 years old, we let them have an hour in the morning and an hour in the afternoon before they have to sit in class for instruction.
Well, thank you, Dennis. I'll let somebody else chime in. I've said too much anyway, but yeah, well, thank you very much for your comments on all that.
No problem.
Yeah, it's great. Great conversation. This is an uphill challenge for you, Dennis. There's a lot here, and as Bob commented, brought up some things that are going on. It's even more so, as you see, there's a lot behind the scenes going on. That's why when Dwayne is running for president here, he's not really focusing on issues, because issues are, well, they're made up. We're basically, the bottom line is our survival and the environment, and what can we do to enhance that and to be better off with the environment? You know, what can we do actually to not destroy the environment? Because a lot of what, like Bob mentioned, a lot of what we do is to destroy, pollute, poison the environment, which is killing everybody. So what can we do to offset that? That if there's an issue, I would say that's the issue. So anyway, I know that Claudia's here. Claudia, would you like to comment, or do you have a question from Corpus Christi, Texas?
Yes, sir. To your guests, what a wonderful sharing that you're giving us, information we need to function better as a person living in the corporation of the United States. One of the questions that I have is along the same line as Robert has just a few minutes ago, is as a president, how can we encourage or get the children to help us save their planet, because we're the ones that messed it up for them and they're coming into it. How can we get them to bring forth ideas that are simple and easy to do, something on their level? That way we can incorporate all of these ideas without having to deal with quote unquote the government and all kinds of restrictions. I really am tired of all of this force used to stop people with good ideas from coming forward. They need to be protected. I've gathered over the years that there are a lot of inventions that have come forward that could save our planet right now, but big corporations, oil companies, agricultural, pharmaceutical, all of these companies that manufacture products that pollute and destroy our planet, we don't need to bother them or touch them. Just say, go ahead and do that. But we have a better solution over here. And maybe we could get more of the adults on board, so to speak, with the idea of save your child's planet. Don't pollute. Don't buy products. Change your car to a water-powered car, use solar energy, get rid of all the things that impact your life, give you, restrictions that are not helping the planet. If we go through, if you went through the children, possibly the rest of the country would become educated, quote unquote, into what's possible of saving this planet for them. It's their planet that we're destroying, and we need to stop it. Thank you for this time.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I go through these waves where I get disappointed in the young people by seeing them do like the Tide Pod Challenge or something like that. But then I get heartened by seeing people like Greta who've actually gone out of her way, got out of her comfort zone, left her country, and has become a model of derision and ridicule by the people who deny that the climate change exists. She's putting her life and her humanity on the line to try to educate people. And that this is why I think an enriched education system would benefit us to no degree. You know, when I was young, I used to take apart radios just to look at see how they work and try to figure out how I could make this thing do this or that or the other. But it wasn't until I got into college that I actually had a class that I could actually understand what all those little components did and figured out what they meant and how they operated together. I just wish that, you know, that opportunity was presented to me when I was much younger. I think I probably would have come out as an electrical and mechanical engineer instead of somebody who knows how to do a lot of different things, but hasn't figured out exactly what to do with his life, you know, other than helping people. That's the greatest gift and realization that I've come through my life, and that's through my exposure through a lot of different things, is that I've discovered that, you know, it's not the skills and talents that I have that I want to benefit from. It's I have a deep-rooted need to want to help people, and that's pretty much what I've dedicated the rest of my life to over the last 9-10 years is to do what I can to help people the best I can. And, you know, this wasn't mentioned at all in my bio, but I am an ordained Buddhist minister. So I try to seek balance in not only my life, but to try to help people seek balance in their own lives. And finding happiness is not necessarily the thing that you can do through work, but having those experiences and knowledge through your experiences is what gives you happiness. And, you know, I find my happiness just in helping people and teaching people what I have to show.
Thank you, Dennis and Claudie. Tim from Grants Pass, Oregon, do you have a question or comment for Dennis?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, this 5G technology that's being created here on Earth, if you were president, would you be testing it to see if it has harmful effects? And if it is proven that it does, would you be able to get rid of it?
I absolutely believe we need to do a lot of testing on 5G. Where I live, I'm very fortunate. Where I live, 5 miles down the road, there's no cell signal. And 10 miles down the other way, there's no cell signal. So I live in a virtual dead space. There's no Wi-Fi out of my house, no cell phone signal. And the internet companies won't set up the internet in my neighborhood. So I'm one who actively avoids a lot of this radiation from radio transmission. So I would definitely want to do a lot of studying into this 5G, especially knowing how microwaves affect cells on the micro level. Higher frequency waves do not look too promising to me. We could eventually end up making baked potatoes out of our brains with this 5G. So really, we need to look at all the the broad spectrum of the network that, or the radio signals that the FCC has auctioned off here recently in the last 20 years. Certainly, we need to look at any communication device that uses high-frequency radio waves to transmit the signals, because they're going through not only our organic tissue, but the organic tissue of everything else on this planet. We could, essentially, we could be just making giant microwaves, microwave transmitters throughout the planet. And, you know, as the planet is warming up, we don't need to increase microwave transmissions.
Yeah, thanks. And another thing, have you seen anything or about these aliens?
No, I haven't seen much about aliens. I've always been interested in outer space and extraterrestrial life forms. I had a plan when I was younger that I wanted to join the Air Force, go to the Air Force Academy, get a doctorate degree, and go join NASA so I could go out into space. So I'm really interested in the possible contact with extraterrestrial species. I've said this on a number of different places that I'm a Star Trek socialist, and that I believe that technology could help remove our greed ambitions. Money is a tool, and I believe that the biggest tools have the most of it. So we need to get away from that focus of greed for money and focus more on a greed for knowledge. We need to really engender a hunger and desire for education, for knowledge, for skills. Hopefully by providing an enriched educational experience for everyone. You know, a lot of people are talking about free college, but a lot of people that I've seen aren't prepared for college when they get their high school diploma. So we really need to be focusing on early childhood education as well. Boy, I go wide when I go for it, don't I?
So yeah, Dennis, this is Bob again. You know, when you said you're a Tibetan minister or a Buddhist minister?
Yes, sir.
You must have heard of Lhotse Rampa somewhere along the line.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever heard of him?
I have, yeah. My spiritual journey is always getting me to explore not just the Buddhist side, but I'm always, in fact, just before I got my ordination as a Buddhist minister, I was studying Sufism and whirling dervishes and reading the Quran. So it's, for me, it once again, it's like I don't know if you guys remember that labyrinth game where you had the board with a bunch of holes in the maze and a marble in it where you'd tilt the board around until you fell into a hole. That's kind of what Buddhism has been for me. Is that I began my spiritual exploration when I was about 16 or so, and eventually by the time I was in my late 30s, I realized that I was a Buddhist. So I'm always interested in learning a lot more about spiritual philosophy and religion.
Well, Lhotse Rampa, he wrote 22 books, and he was a lama in the Shakyamuni Monastery. He was raised in the Shakyamuni Monastery as a medical doctor, and he talked about the history, how they go back 5,000 years, and one of his you know, I read all 22 of his books, and I would highly recommend that you look at them and read them, like The Third Eye. But one of my favorite books the name of his book was My Trip to Retz, was the name of the book. It's a real thin book. It's 8.5 by 11 and maybe 30 pages long. And he talks about how the senior lamas took him up into the mountains of Tibet and they went into this room where they had the advanced technology, all the saucers that they fly out of there, and they put them in this machine that basically parked their physical body and put them in their astral body, and they strapped in, and then they went to Venus, and the planet Venus, which is operates primarily on the astral plane, and Retz is the spiritual capital city of our solar system, and he explains what he saw there and everything he did, and talked about the reality of UFOs and all that kind of stuff. So if you're into that sort of thing, you would find that most interesting.
Yeah, I'm into a lot of different things. I mean, when I was 18, I attended a wedding of one of my mother's friends, and I was sitting at a table with a CEO from IBM, an airline pilot, and a lawyer, and I was like, I don't really know how to talk to any of these people. And so at that point, I just decided that if I'm not going to get the education I can get from a institution, then the best thing I could do is to educate myself through as many different resources and sources that I can. And I think that really is what makes me different from a lot of the other candidates that are running for president, is that I have no problem running in the circles of different people. I don't know if you guys know Les Wexner, but he was the owner of the Limited and the Gap. I've met him a couple of occasions. Jack Black, the actor. I used to have a picture of me and him where I met him the first time. My mom, before Jack got famous, used to say, "Hey, your friend's on TV." But I've also grew up very poor in Appalachia, so being able to depend on yourself and scrap and survive are very valuable skills that I've developed through my living. So I think that's really what makes me different than a lot of people, is I can feel comfortable at a moonshine still as well as I could at a CEO board.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're not going to get a real education inside of our educational system. That's only for the 8-to-5 working force. The real education comes from knowing the right people and who to contact. And that brings up another question that Val may want to go into more detail and share with you, and that is the real guides. The real guides are a group of people that are on this planet to help wake people up to what's really going on everywhere, not only in creation, but beyond creation. I mean, it's an education that can't even be put hardly, you can hardly write about it. It is so highly educational that words can't describe it. Perhaps Val could tell you a little bit more about the real guides and what they're here for. Val?
Yes. Maybe if Sandy's here, maybe I'll pass it over to her, so let her give a chance to talk too, since our time is somewhat limited. Sandy, are you there?
Well, she says she's got a sore throat and can't hardly talk very well. So.
Okay, then I'll take it. Yeah, Dennis, we're associated with we call them the real guides, and they're basically just like anybody else, but they're more aware of what's going on. And this is on all levels, like Bob mentioned. This is even into the other, you could say, life levels or realms. And it gives they help us to see a whole lot bigger picture of what's going on. And that enhances our survival. And this is nothing to do with religion or spiritual teachings, which is... for some people, mind-boggling. Well, if it's not related to spiritual, or religious, or metaphysical, or psychic, what is it? Well, that's what their education is basically about, is just what is beyond all that, or what is not really beyond even, it's just what else is there. So it's really an adventure, and it takes us to probably the last subject we talk about today, which is, I mentioned before, the Underground Railroad. And basically, the real guides are helping us to get through the restrictions and the people after us, just like the slaves, Harriet Tubman and the help she gave to the slaves getting to freedom. Well, they're doing the same thing with us. They're helping us get through this matrix, all the restrictions, the authoritarians that we have to face, the military-industrial complex, all the things you think of, and helping us to to gain our freedom. So that's in a nutshell. And maybe you could talk about the Underground Railroad a little bit, what you found and how it relates to what your presidential campaign is about. Maybe you can relate it somehow to what you're doing with the campaigning and all.
Well, my study of the Underground Railroad really got kicked into gear when I moved back down here to Southern Ohio, Ironton, Lawrence County. My grandmother grew up across the river in Kentucky, Ashland, Kentucky, and my grandfather grew up here in Ironton. And when I was younger, I watched this movie with Cicely Tyson, A Woman Called Moses. You talk about Harriet Tubman. That was my first really introduction into the Underground Railroad. But I grew up in West Virginia, so there's a lot of Civil War sites across the places where I was living and exploring as a youth. And so when I moved back down here to Southern Ohio around 2006, 2007, I started reaching out to the librarians. And of course, unless you educate yourself, the only thing you're going to get is secondhand knowledge. And oftentimes that secondhand knowledge is not really the best source. So I started reading, like I said in the biography, I had 30 books about the Underground Railroad and associated things. I read books about early river traffic and commerce on the Ohio River, because I started finding articles in the local paper about slaves being pressed into bales of hay. But really, how that relates to my own experiences as far as running campaigns, it's really about a grassroots effort. People may not know each other as being neighbors and working out towards the same goal, but it's just making that initial contact and showing how not only does this benefit the person who we're looking to help, but it also benefits you in the long run. This is one of the things that I push for when it comes to reparations, because I point out that there was a great deal of white people who were defrauded from the coal industry by being paid in scrip. It's the same thing with slavery, where they weren't paid at all, or they were paid less than what their efforts were worth. So when I point out, when we go to reparations for those who suffered in slavery, we also need to start, after that's taken care of, we can start looking at the other people who were harmed by the harmful petrochemical industries from extraction, not only of coal, but of oil, and now we're seeing natural gas. We need to see reparations for people who are harmed from environmental and ecological disasters. The Underground Railroad, it was a grassroots effort and a network of people who didn't want credit for what they were doing. They just wanted to do something right, and I think that's what a lot of people want out of life, is they don't want credit for doing something right. They just want to be doing the right thing, and we need to be inclusive when it comes to a lot of these issues. I've hit on the Green Party a number of times, telling them, every time I've run, I've gotten people from both sides of the aisle voting for me because I present to them the issues that I'm running on as in framing the message the best that they can understand it. So we really need to create a broader consensus and elevate and educate everybody to at least a minimum level. That way we can get a genuine output for the better of everybody. And really, bottom line, I think it's all based in education. And the better we can educate our communities, the better that they can see how they can make changes on their own, as well as supporting the larger picture changes that I would support as far as creating a renewable infrastructure and reducing our need for fossil fuels, as well as increasing community employment through renewable energy programs.
Thank you, Dennis. We have online also Ariana from Stanton, California. Ariana, do you have a comment or question for Dennis? Okay, if not, we're about ready to wind it up, but if anybody else who's already asked a question or commented, would they like to come in again do you have more questions or comments for Dennis before we wind it up?
Yes, this is Claudia in Texas. I just wanted to thank you, Dennis, for bringing your position forward, and hopefully good luck to the best candidate that the best man wins. And I'm looking forward to seeing your presence on the ticket.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. And everything that we can do as a group in agreement with saving the all-natural environment, and I don't mean just saving it, I mean supporting it, supporting the all-natural environment that supports us, and to look forward to the future years of our young children, the 2-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, the 7-year-olds, the teenagers. They have brilliant ideas that are not brought forward that could really turn this mess that we've created around and help us get it straightened out. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a lot of hope for the youth. A lot of people say that they're lazy, but they're just not given the opportunity. You know, there's a lot less opportunity growing up for kids now than I had as a youth. At least we had public swimming pools when I was a kid. They don't even have those now. So we really need to engage a lot of these younger folks, especially in the electoral process, because if they're not participating, we're going to end up with the same messes that we've had for generations now.
Anybody else would like to comment?
I just have a suggestion or try to share that the new presentation has a song that goes, "New you." And that's if a person sincerely wants to get some real guidance and a real education, they can test it for themselves like 10, 15 minutes before they go to sleep each night, and maybe the same in the morning, and see what life shows you. See ya, and good luck.
Thank you.
Yes,
yeah,
Dennis.
If anybody's interested in more of the issues that I have or the things that I'm running on, I have a website. It's www.dlpotus2020.com. Lots of information on there. I'm about to put up something. I don't know if you guys know about Martin Luther and his 95 thesis, but I've kind of mirrored Martin Luther's 95 thesis in a thesis statement that I've made about freedom of the press and the press not being held up to its responsibilities under the First Amendment. That'll be coming out this week, and next week my renewable infrastructure investment program should be coming out. So I think you guys will be really interested in both of those.
And that'll be on your website.
Yep, on my website. Yes, on my website, www.dlpotus2020.com.
Okay. The way I contacted you initially was on Facebook. So you're active on Facebook as well?
Yep. Yep. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and I think that's it.
Okay.
You got to connect to electronically to the youth sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's all about community and supporting each other for better survival, and that's what we do. And I see that you're attempting to do that too. So good luck with your campaign, and let's see what we can do together to offset what's going on with the planet and do something better for it and for others as well. So thank you again for being on, Dennis. Good luck with everything.
No problem. Hey, one last plug. I'm going to be in Idaho next weekend for the Eco Summit out there. Idaho Green Party is having their first annual convention at Eco Summit in Boise. So information will be available online if anybody wants to come out.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dennis. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys.
Thank everybody. Thank you for coming on, everybody. See you next time.